This is Inform Your Resistance with PRA, Political Research Associates. Tune in twice a month to hear experts, researchers, journalists, academics, and movement strategists explain some of the most significant contemporary threats to democracy from the mainstream and far right. With Inform Your Resistance, we distill what you need to know most. I'm your host, Cokie Mendes, Communications Director here at PRA. Before we get into this episode, I'm excited to share with you a special sneak preview of a new podcast series, The Insurgents, Sheriffs. This collaboration between PRA and Quintero Productions uncovers how a national network of far-right sheriffs is mobilizing to create a white Christian republic, one county at a time. Subscribe today wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss our launch later this month. And without further ado...
The county sheriff, with his five-star badge and cowboy hat, the hero in almost every Western. Waving his guns, stopping outlaws in their tracks, the sheriff is embedded in the image of the American West. But America cannot claim ownership of the sheriff. Sheriffs are a vestige of British rule. Far from the autonomous depictions of law enforcement we're so familiar with, Shire Reeves were actually appointed by the king to collect taxes and do the king's bidding. And just over 10 years ago, a group of sheriffs gathered in the West, in the state of Nevada, not to sling their pistols and conquer new land, but to sip coffee and plan their strategies against the federal government inside a conference room in a hotel in Las Vegas.
We have gone downhill, and we have a government today who believes that their policies and their regulations supersede the Constitution.
That's former Graham County Sheriff Mack from Arizona welcoming people to a convening he planned in January 2012. He was no longer a sheriff at the time, but he was becoming sort of a celebrity among a crew of far-right leaders.
That's why the Founding Fathers put that in the Constitution, that we're all required to swear an oath of allegiance to the Constitution, not to the governor, not to the president.
He had invited some controversial sheriffs and far-right leaders from all over the country to discuss a strategy about how to take the country back, one county at a time. This was the CSPOA's first national meeting on record of what the former Sheriff Mack called the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association, or CSPOA for short. Sheriff Mack, its founder, managed to attract big names of a rather small but significant network. People like Stuart Rhodes, the Texas-based Yale Law School graduate who founded the far-right militia, the Oath Keepers, in 2009. Over 10 years later, well, we all know what they did. Yes, the same Stuart Rhodes that was sentenced to 18 years in prison for seditious conspiracy for his role leading the January 6, 2021 Capitol insurrection. But let's go back in time, 9 years earlier. All of these folks were gathered behind closed doors, not in a bunker, just in plain sight and proud, discussing a strategy that centered sheriffs as a powerful force to undermine the state and federal government in a convention center in Las Vegas. This was long before former President Trump was elected, before the infamous 2014 Bundy standoff in Nevada with the federal government, before the Malheur Wildlife Refuge takeover of militias in Oregon in 2016, and definitely before the 2021 Capitol insurrection. How did sheriffs come to represent a movement to bring down the federal government rather than protect and uphold it? We're going to try to find some of those answers. I'm Chloe Cooper, You're listening to The Insurgents, Sheriffs. Take a moment right now to subscribe to this series.
On today's episode, I'm reading Nativist Bedfellows, The Christian Right Embraces Anti-Immigrant Politics, written by Tarso Luis Ramos and Pam Chamberlain, and published in the summer 2008 issue of the Public Eye magazine. PRA is featuring this article as part of an ongoing series, From the Archive, featuring must-read or listen-to pieces from PRA's more than 40 years of publishing. In the article, Ramos and Chamberlain explore the highly successful organizing effort of the anti-immigrant right to mobilize the Christian right through their base. The article details the potent intersection of two anti-democratic exclusionary movements, which has culminated in our current moment of zealous anti-immigrant organizing and policy development. You can read this article online at politicalresearch.org. Nativist Bedfellows, The Christian Right Embraces Anti-Immigrant Politics, by Tarso Luis Ramos and Pam Chamberlain. If the September 2007 Values Voters Summit is anything to go by, the Christian right is now nearly as worked up about illegal immigration as about abortion and same-sex marriage. At that political gathering, sponsored annually in Washington, D.C. by such key groups as the Family Research Council, and attracting grassroots activists from across the country, the Heritage Foundation's Robert Rector used fuzzy math as he told a packed room that low-skilled immigrants from Latin America actually drain rather than bolster the U.S. economy. A parade of Republican presidential hopefuls, there to court support from right-wing Protestant evangelicals, attempted to outdo each other with the aggressiveness of their border security plans and the severity of the proposed policies towards immigrants. Even former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, who once charged, quote, some anti-immigrant Republicans are guilty of demagoguery and racism, end quote, took a much harder line on this occasion, equating the issues of abortion and illegal immigration, quote, sometimes we talk about why we're importing so many people in our workforce. It might be because for the last 35 years, we have aborted more than a million people each year who would have been in our workforce had we not had the Holocaust of liberalized abortion under a flawed Supreme Court ruling in 1973, end quote. All of this represented a significant shift from the previous year's summit, where the opening address by rising GOP star Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana linked biblical principles to a guest worker program without amnesty. Quoting Exodus 22:21, Pence said, quote, you should not mistreat the alien in your midst, for you yourselves were aliens in Egypt. There is for the believer no asterisk, no exception. We are called as believers to action, an admonition that we do not abandon the alien, and a call to defend law and order and justice, and a belief in the ideals of our founding fathers that we are a nation of immigrants, end quote. Far from embracing anti-immigrant politics as a central movement concern, back in 2006, leaders such as Connie Mackey, vice president of the Family Research Council, or FRC, reported, quote, we are wrestling with it. The hardest part, what to do about those people who are here now, end quote. The FRC, a D.C.-based spinoff of James Dobson's Focus on the Family that helps coordinate the Christian right's legislative and political agendas, was hardly alone in its reluctance to jump headlong into the battle over immigration. During 2006, spokespeople for the evangelical right generally remained quiet on the issue, despite pressure from the Bush administration to support its guest worker program. Some openly warned against alienating conservative Latino evangelicals. The National Association of Evangelicals policy director Richard Sick stated, quote, evangelical leaders are concerned that our voice be a biblical voice that does not send the wrong signal to the growing Latino community, end quote. In October 2006, the organization attempted to stake out a moderate position on immigration, with a resolution that read in part, quote, let us secure our borders, care for all families, and seek further expressions of godly compassion and justice, end quote. Still, 1 month later, The Republicans paid a price for their identification with harsh anti-immigrant policies that targeted Latino communities in the midterm elections. Latino support for Republicans, strongest among Protestant evangelicals, fell from around 44% in 2004 polling to 29% in 2006. By January 2007, the position of some prominent Christian right leaders hardened considerably with the launch of the, quote, Families First in Immigration, end quote, campaign. This sought to take a family values approach to the issue while also adopting a militantly anti-immigrant position. The proposal offered a path to citizenship for those unauthorized immigrants with family who are U.S. citizens, while at the same time issued a frontal assault on the U.S. Constitution's birthright citizenship provision. That is, children born on U.S. soil to non-citizens would no longer receive U.S. citizenship as provided for under the 14th Amendment. Many anti-immigrant activists view birthright citizenship as an incentive for immigration without documents and decry so-called anchor babies, whose legal status encourages their undocumented parents and other relatives to remain in the country. Meanwhile, prominent Christian conservatives, including former House Majority Leader and Texas Republican Tom DeLay, Prison Ministry's Chuck Colson, and 2008 presidential hopeful Mike Huckabee, all began to argue that abortion creates a worker shortage that in turn produces an immigration problem as workers flow in from across the border to fill jobs. Pressure from below. Why would the Christian rights position on immigration shift so drastically from 2006 to 2007, even though it could have a divisive impact on the Republican Party? It seems some of the movement's shepherds are following their flock. That is to say, it is the Christian rights base, not its leadership, that is aligning the movement with anti-immigrant forces. A 2006 Pew Research Center survey revealed that 63% of conservative white evangelical Protestants, the base constituency of the Christian right, view immigrants as a threat to, quote, traditional American customs and values, end quote, as compared with less than half of the general public and 39% of the non-religious. That same year, an FRC survey of its own constituency confirmed that anti-immigrant sentiment is especially strong among those white evangelical Protestants who identify with the Christian right. The FRC reported that 90% of values voters believed deportation of illegal immigrants to be consistent with the, quote, requirements of Christian discipleship, end quote, while a mere 10% opted for welcoming rather than punishing, quote, strangers searching for a better life for themselves and their family, end quote. In 2005, the Christian Coalition of Georgia hosted an immigration forum attended by Reverend Julian Herrera, a local evangelical pastor from Mexico. Herrera was offended by what he heard. Quote, they said they needed to ship us back to our countries like a UPS package. They blamed us for traffic congestion and overloaded hospital emergency rooms, end quote. Sadie Fields, the executive director of the host group, disputed Herrera's memory. But she did say that, quote, illegal immigrants break the law in coming here, and they put a burden on hospitals, schools, and other public services. Open borders also put the United States in danger of terrorist infiltration, end quote. Conservative Christian radio programs across the country now broadcast broadsides against illegal immigration and demands for a more forceful federal response. Confronted with this kind of anti-immigrant zeal at its base, FRC and other Christian right groups began to stake out a hardline position on immigration. Although influential conservative strategists Richard Viguerie, Paul Weyrich, Gary Bauer, Donald Wildman, and others signed on to the, quote, Families First in Immigration, end quote, campaign led by Manuel Miranda, aide to ex-Senator Bill Frist, Republican of Tennessee. The effort collapsed because its family reunification provision was soon perceived to be too soft on, quote, illegals, end quote. For hardliners, this element of the proposal, which put a, quote, Christian face to an otherwise boldly nativist proposal, amounted to splitting the baby. Vigory, who prides himself on taking an accurate pulse of the conservative grassroots, has said, quote, unhappy conservatives should be taken seriously. When conservatives are unhappy, bad things happen to the Republican Party, end quote. In this instance, Vigory explained, quote, there's a line here. Any Republican candidate who tries to compromise on amnesty will lose in 2008. And I and a lot of others will work very hard to make that happen, end quote. Yet again, the movement's base had moved well to the right of its leadership on the issue of immigration. Coming full circle, in announcing the 2008 Values Voters Summit, the Family Research Council's political arm, FRC Action, gave the immigration issue high billing. Quote, this event is a call to action for voter participation, education, and training, and a rallying event for patriotic Americans who want to transform the political landscape on issues such as the sanctity of life and marriage, illegal immigration, religious freedom, health care, radical Islam, judicial activism, Hollywood's influence, the media, and much more, end quote. So the Christian right now finds itself in a de facto alliance with leading anti-immigrant organizations that favor sterilization and abortion among non-European migrants to the United States. They are finding common ground in a resurgence of nativism. Why now? Since its resurgence as a social movement in the mid-1970s, the Christian right's leadership had largely steered clear of the immigration issue. Even as most of the movement's base supported measures such as California's successful Proposition 187 campaign in 1994 to deny public education and social services to unauthorized immigrants, most of its leadership considered the issue a liability, particularly in light of their commitment to, quote, racial reconciliation, end quote. Author Sarah Diamond describes the movement's late 80s and early 90s racial reconciliation movement as a, quote, drive led by white evangelical clergy to publicly repent for decades of institutional racism, the kind that led to the formation of racially segregated Baptist and Pentecostal churches in the first place, end quote. Given that the courting of Black and Latino conservatives remains an important movement goal, it is particularly notable that Christian right leaders and groups have in recent years publicly adopted anti-immigrant positions. A complex combination of beliefs and material developments has helped shape the Christian right's animosity towards immigrants. A segment of the contemporary Christian right continues to mobilize around the belief that the United States was founded as a Christian country. According to these, quote, Christian nationalists, end quote, America is God's chosen land, a, quote, city on a hill, end quote, to echo 17th century Puritan writings. That must set an example to the rest of the world of a nation governed by Christian principles. Secularists and moral relativists represent a threat to the Christian nation, in their view, but so too do those who challenge American, i.e. conservative Anglo-Protestant, cultural norms, such as immigrants who bring their own religious beliefs into the country. Reactions to immigration, both authorized and unauthorized, are shaped in part by significant changes in the nature of immigration to the United States over the last few decades. Unusually heavy immigration has driven the foreign-born population from a low of 5% in 1970 to 12.5% of the total U.S. population in 2000. Approaching the 15% high water mark set around 1890. Earlier waves of immigration have given rise to similarly strong anti-immigrant movements. In the present period, the settlement pattern of immigrants, once highly concentrated in such, quote, gateway, end quote, cities as New York, Los Angeles, Miami, and Chicago, is increasingly decentralized, resulting in much wider exposure to recent arrivals by U.S.-born communities around the country. The foreign-born now account for over 9% of Georgia's population and nearly 6% of Idaho's. And since the repeal in the mid-1960s of the racial quota system that privileged immigrants of European descent, most of those immigrating to the United States have been people of color, particularly from Latin America and Asia, a development that has inflamed white nationalism among those who perceive immigration as a threat to a superior, quote, American, end quote, culture established by Anglo and generally Protestant settlers. Historically, the interplay between Christian nationalism and white nationalism has been an especially explosive combination. Backlash against earlier waves of Irish and Italian immigrants was informed by the prevailing view that these populations were neither Christian nor white. Economic instability is another factor nurturing anti-immigrant feelings among the Christian right. Scapegoating immigrants for the difficulty in finding a good job, overcrowded public schools, ruined housing stock, and overburdened healthcare and other social services offers a familiar outlet for frustrations caused by complex, and in some cases, systemic factors. Alongside these factors, the war on terror has mobilized Christian right resentment against immigrants by recasting immigration as a national security matter. One of the most popular workshops at the 2007 Values Voters Summit was one on, quote, Islamofascism, end quote, by prominent neoconservative and Center for Security Policy President Frank Gaffney. An overflow crowd listened as he charged President Bush, commander-in-chief in the war on terror, with being soft on the enemy and for repeatedly embracing, quote, Islamofascists, end quote, for fear of appearing racist. The Christian right's leadership and base have fervently supported the war on terror since its inception, viewing Islam as a central threat to national security. Quote, clash of civilizations, end quote, arguments that depict a Christian West in a global apocalyptic confrontation with, quote, radical Islam, end quote, inflame Christian nationalism in ways that find parallel expression in the immigration debates. Republican Congressman Steve King of Iowa, a member of the House Immigration Reform Caucus, and the only congressman in the 109th Congress to receive a 100% score from both the FRC and the National Right to Life Committee, has been a leader in making the immigration terrorist connection. Quote, apologists for illegals refuse to acknowledge the connection between terrorism and our lax immigration policies. The September 11 hijackers used our own laws to enter the country, but remained in the country and violated their visas by staying when they expired. Only 4 years has passed since September 11, 2001, but did we learn no lesson? End quote. Characterizing the southern land border as a major front in the war on terror has helped facilitate the Christian right's focus on immigration. According to Colin Hanna, the president of Let Freedom Ring, an anti-immigrant group that positions itself, quote, between faith and politics, end quote, only a 2,000-mile-long fence along the U.S. southern border will repel a, quote, alien invasion, end quote. Irreconcilable differences? If anything could discourage the Christian right from lending support to the anti-immigrant movement, it might be that many of its most prominent organizations were created to advance a population control agenda, including sterilization and abortion for immigrants of color. However, using segmented outreach that targets different constituencies with different messages, the network of groups, many founded by retired ophthalmologists named John Tanton, appears to have done a good job of keeping this secret from the Christian right. Tanton, founder and primary patron of the Federation for American Immigration Reform, or FAIR, and a half dozen other leading anti-immigrant organizations, is undeniably the individual most responsible for building up the infrastructure of the contemporary anti-immigrant movement over the last 30 years. The first president of Northern Michigan Planned Parenthood, which, like other Planned Parenthood affiliates, provides abortion, Tanton's support for population control and focus on immigration stem from his goal of maintaining the numerical and cultural dominance of Americans of European descent. His is a white nationalist agenda. While the groups in Tanton's network generally take pains to disavow any racial animus and have become increasingly successful at mainstreaming themselves in news media and policy circles, Tanton was quite forthcoming in private memos to anti-immigrant leaders that were never intended to become public. In one such memo from 1986, Tanton reveals his obsession with the fertility rates of Latina immigrants in the U.S., quote, to govern is to populate, end quote, he asserts, and goes on to ask, quote, will the present majority peaceably hand over its political power to a group that is simply more fertile? As whites see their power and control over their lives declining, Will they simply go quietly into the night, or will there be an explosion? End quote. Under Tanton's leadership, Fair accepted some $1.2 million from a 70-year-old nativist philanthropy, the Pioneer Fund, which finances eugenics research, studies that seek to demonstrate that intelligence is linked to sex and race. Before the latest anti-immigrant backlash, which has turned known bigots into seemingly credible news sources, Tanton's racist diatribes carried more significant repercussions. They led celebrated news anchor Walter Cronkite and even anti-affirmative action campaigner Linda Chavez in 1988 to resign from the Tanton-founded U.S. English, which promotes official English legislation at the state and national levels. Watchdogs like Center for New Community and the Southern Poverty Law Center labor to expose the racism of Tanton's network and the anti-immigrant movement more generally. By contrast, there has been no comparable criticism from the right of Tanton's advocacy of abortion and sterilization. Since founding FAIR in 1979, Tanton and his collaborators spawned a hydra of front groups that presents different faces of the anti-immigrant movement to different constituencies. The network markets anti-immigrant perspectives and policies to, among others, environmentalists, population control advocates, trade unionists, African Americans, nativists, elected officials, mainstream news media outlets, and of course, conservative evangelicals. The upsurge in local anti-immigrant activity has brought this national anti-immigrant network greater prominence, including regular exposure on mainstream news programs such as CNN's strongly anti-immigrant Lou Dobbs Tonight Show. According to Nativism in the House, a 2007 report by the Center for New Community, or CNC, lobbyists for Tanton's Numbers USA have even served as, quote, virtual staffers, end quote, and legislative counsel for the large and influential House Immigration Reform Caucus, founded by retiring Republican Congressman Tom Tancredo of Colorado. However, while concerns about the growing Latino immigrant population figured significantly in this national anti-immigrant network's outreach to environmentalists, most notably in a controversial 1998 campaign to transform the Sierra Club into an immigration opponent, such arguments are downplayed or altogether absent in the movement's outreach to evangelicals. This capacity to effectively niche market anti-immigrant views to a range of different and even conflicting constituencies is one of the movement's major achievements. While sophisticated messaging plays a role, it is also worth noting that not all grassroots anti-immigrant militants share the national group's sometimes unspoken obsession with defending the nation against the fertile wombs of immigrant women. While committed to protecting the United States from what they regard as foreign hordes who cannot or will not assimilate, most grassroots militants aren't focused on population growth or population control as issues in their own right. Rather, they're preoccupied with the idea that the United States has too many of the wrong kind of people, and that more are coming here every day. Local groups may derisively characterize Latina immigrants as, quote, breeders, end quote, but in keeping with the Homeland Security moment, their focus tends to be on mass deportations and a heavily militarized border, rather than abortion and sterilization. But while abortion and population control are not yet dividing pro-life nativists from their brothers and sisters in anti-immigrant politics, some Christian conservatives have sounded the alarm. Utah Republican Chris Cannon, who has a solidly pro-life voting record, and in 1999 was among the 13 House members who prosecuted President Bill Clinton's impeachment trial, is especially vocal. During a 2004 congressional subcommittee hearing on guest worker programs, Cannon referred to Numbers USA and the Center for Immigration Studies as, quote, part of the family of Tanton groups, end quote, whose goals Cannon later described as, quote, zero population, sterilization, abortion, eugenics, euthanasia, end quote. Cannon, in turn, has come under fire for siding with Western agricultural interests in their support for immigrant guest worker legislation. Unlike Cannon, most conservative Christian leaders have so far opted to overlook the eugenicist baggage of leading anti-immigrant groups. Nativism is proving to be a stronger bond between these sectors than abortion is a wedge. unholy alliances. In the 19th century, Protestant nationalists deemed waves of largely Catholic, Irish, Italian, Polish, and German immigrants as incapable of assimilating into Anglo-Protestant society, much as Latinos and Muslims are viewed today. Anti-Catholic sentiments persist within today's burgeoning nativist movement. However, today the conservative white Protestant evangelical movement is in a strategic alliance with the Roman Catholic Church on a range of, quote, life concerns, with abortion serving as the cornerstone of this coalition. Could hostility towards Catholics become a wedge? Anti-Catholic bigotry is not as virulent in today's immigration debates as it once was, and some of the most strident anti-immigrant pundits and activists, including Pat and Bay Buchanan, are themselves Roman Catholic. Yet, anti-Catholicism nevertheless remains a significant dynamic in the anti-immigrant movement. During an October 2007 debate on immigration in Chicago, Fairfield Representative Rosanna Pulido, an evangelical Protestant, lambasted the Roman Catholic Church for its allegedly wholesale support for immigrant rights. Pulido claimed, quote, "When you have a Catholic church that has been ravaged because of all the children who were molested and a lot of people upset with that leaving the church, what better way to fill your pews and fill your offering coffers than with inviting in and giving sanctuary to illegal aliens?" End quote. Pulido's remarks arguably reveal less about the substance of her views on Roman Catholics than about her willingness to go to any lengths to discredit a perceived adversary. Internally, however, John Tanton's network has long fretted over the Roman Catholic Church's anti-abortion stance as a factor in the higher fertility rates of Latino immigrants. In one of his infamous leaked memos from the organization's first decade, Tanton pondered the utility of anti-Catholic rhetoric, asking, quote, "What are the implications of a Latino immigration for the separation of church and state?" The Catholic Church has never been reticent on this point. If they get a majority of the voters, will they pitch out this concept? End quote. Linking Catholics to the thorny issue of abortion, Tanton added, quote, "Same question of the topic of abortion / choice, birth control, population control," end quote. Grassroots nativist activists can be even less subtle in the expression of their anti-Catholic views than national anti-immigrant think tanks and lobby groups. Upset at a Roman Catholic church in San Diego that provides breakfast to day laborers and allows them to wait for employers outside the building, local Minuteman and a group called San Diego Christians for Secure Borders launched a campaign in the summer of 2007 to close the longtime day labor site. Dozens of anti-immigrant demonstrators turned out for the demonstrations, which featured an effigy of a priest with horns and a, quote, "Father Satan," end quote, label. Signs at the protest read, quote, "More illegal aliens equals more money," end quote, and, quote, "Tax the Catholic Church, a political organization," end quote. San Diego Minutemen founder David Schwilk explained that, quote, "Someone very upset wanted to show the evil in the Catholic Church," end quote. If segments of the anti-immigrant movement see the Roman Catholic Church as an adversary, the anti-choice movement looks upon Roman Catholics as vital allies. After all, Catholics were the first opponents of abortion in this country and have played a crucial role, both financially and in the growth of an energized base, in the development of a, quote, pro-life movement. The future of the Christian Rights Alliance with the Roman Catholic Church could possibly be altered by these expressions of anti-Catholic sentiment, but the strength and importance of an anti-choice coalition that includes them both would probably survive such a challenge. Nativism, a third force. While the diverse anti-immigrant upsurge is greatly benefiting from support within the Christian right, there is little evidence that influence is flowing in the other direction. Rather, some anti-immigrant nativists are responding to Christian right interest in their cause by stepping up outreach, further solidifying the relationship's imbalance. In January 2008, Roy Beck of Numbers USA and Michael Cutler of the Center for Immigration Studies headlined a, quote, "culture conference," end quote, for the California Branch of Concerned Women for America, or CWA, the largest Christian right women's organization in the country, which up to now has not paid much attention to immigration. Beck usually presents a slideshow depicting an immigration population explosion disaster in the United States, resulting from unchecked immigration. At the conference, Cutler did his best to appeal to CWA's main concerns, family values and national security. In fact, he managed to combine the two in a single anecdote about the, quote, Hezbollah-connected, end quote, Nadine Prouty, quote, whose sham marriage enabled her to eventually become an FBI as well as a CIA employee, end quote. At least until recently, such outreach to conservative white Protestant evangelicals by the anti-immigrant establishment, for instance, through Roy Beck's Evangelicals for Immigration Reform, has fallen something short of robust. A front group for the Federation for American Immigration Reform, Evangelicals for Immigration Reform, doesn't even maintain a website. Moreover, while the Christian right and anti-immigrant movements have largely distinct leaderships and separate movement and organizational abilities, the borders that define their goals and constituencies are overlapping and permeable. However useful it is to examine the shifting relationships between these movements' leaders and institutions, it is equally valuable to look upon nativism as an overlapping social movement, as well as a tendency cursing through various movements and campaigns on the right, including the two movements discussed here. It constitutes a third force. Consider, the media success of the Minuteman groups ushered militant anti-immigrant politics into the mainstream during the spring and summer of 2005. Stoking the flames of white nationalism within the Christian right that had already been ignited by 9/11 and the War on Terror. In this way, sectors of the anti-immigrant movement opened political space for Christian nationalists at both base and leadership levels to express their anti-immigrant nativism, causing a shift in focus within the Christian right. In this political campaign season, when many mainstream pundits are yet again declaring the death of the Christian right, it is instructive to remember that part of the movement is vibrantly, even forcefully engaged in anti-immigrant campaigns. To the extent that such pundits focus solely on the Christian right's ability to choose the President of the United States and to win legislative bans on abortion and what it regards as sexual perversion, for example, same-sex marriage, they fail to perceive the movement in its true dimensions, complexities, and capacities. It is early yet to know how various Christian right leaders will assess the costs and benefits of their alliance with anti-immigrant nativists. Their calculations will be further complicated by the Republican Party's nomination of Senator John McCain for president. Despite his hawkish national security credentials, McCain has been widely excoriated by the right as being, quote, pro-amnesty and, quote, soft on immigration. Pragmatists surely are aware that the immigration issue did very little to help conservative candidates in the 2006 congressional elections or the presidential candidates in the primary. Having responded to pressure from their constituencies to address immigration, some Christian right leaders may simply be making the best of a difficult situation until they can extricate themselves from the morass. The movement seems ripe for splits between pragmatists and purists. In the meantime, it is nativism that continues to drive this movement convergence. And it is nativism that must be confronted if the anti-immigrant resurgence is to be turned back. At an April 2007 anti-immigrant rally sponsored by FAIR, LA talk radio host Reverend Terry Anderson told the crowd, quote, "We've got to make it in this country so immigrants can't exist here. We've got to rattle their teeth and put their feet to the fire," end quote. Tarso Luis Ramos is the executive director of Political Research Associates and has been researching and challenging the U.S. right wing for more than 25 years. Pam Chamberlain is a former senior researcher at Political Research Associates with an expertise in gender justice, education, and campaign issues. Visit politicalresearch.org to read this article, and tune in to our next episode to hear more about the contemporary right wing movements we need to be paying attention to. Thank you for listening to Inform Your Resistance with Political Research Associates. Today's episode was hosted by me, Koki Mendes. The podcast is produced and fact-checked by Olivia Lawrence Weilman and Jack Gieskang. Hudini Rajagopalan created our communications and marketing materials, and Frank Lawrence, our music. Sound design and mixing by Alicia Crawford. If you haven't already, rate, review, and subscribe. And the best thing you can do to help us is to tell your comrades about the pod. Resisting authoritarianism is better with friends. Until next time.